I am Pierre Lumumba here at the Manzoni Wildlife Estate in Machakos County in the Republic of Kenya, here in the continent of Africa, continuing with the conversations regarding issues about the continent of Africa. And today we focus on an interesting individual, Muammar al-Gaddafi. Muammar al-Gaddafi became known to the world in the month of September 1969, when as a 27-year-old, he led the revolt against King Idris. And when he did so, the first thing that he struggled with was his identity. There are those who made the claim that he was not Arab enough, and therefore he made a lot of people very uncomfortable. But he came and made the claim that he was a pan-Arabist in the League of Gamal Abdel Nasser, and that he wanted to create a new Libya that was not beholden to the feudal system that had been in Libya for a long time, even after they had freed themselves from colonization. He led a military regime and tried to reform Libya, and ultimately in the 1970s, 1979 to be exact, he made Libya to be known as the Arab Libyan Jamahiriya, which is the socialist state that he created. His movement was quite clear in terms of his political orientation, that very quickly he moved to what can be defined in contemporary political terms as the left. He was seen to be a pan-Arabist, but much more of a pan-Africanist, because he looked to the south, and one can also say that he saw himself in the mold of Ernesto Che Guevara. And that is why, as he changed the Libyan flag and as he came about with his Green Book, which he said was going to govern how he reigned, to govern Libya, he said the people themselves must be involved in their governance. And during that period, accusations were made against Muammar al-Gaddafi that he was sponsoring terrorists. And indeed, he himself did say he was not sponsoring terrorists, but he was sponsoring freedom fighters. His hands in the Irish movement in Northern Ireland, the Moro in as far as the Philippines. He was in Sahrawi. He was sponsoring and supporting the African National Congress. He was supporting the Palestinian Liberation Organization. He was present in Chad. He was even present in places like Liberia, supporting individuals there. He became that revolutionary. And one of the most amazing things is how he leveraged on the oil. Because when oil was discovered and started being exploited in Libya in the quantities that we now know are there, he took the view that the oil could be should be for the benefit of the Libyan people. And as long as the Western companies were there, he told them this is going to be for the benefit of the Libyan peoples. And to his credit, what he did was then to say that we've got to refine our own oil. Oil Libya was born out of that. We are going to use this to subsidize education. We are going to subsidize health. We are going to create a social welfare state. We are going to get water from the aquifers in the south and bring them to the Libyan people, and efforts were made in that regard. But the Western world was not always comfortable with him. And that is why during the Reagan administration, they bombed Libya in 1986, and he lost very close relatives. And he then took the view from the Pan-African standpoint that the Organization of African Unity, as it was being run, was an organization that was not Pan-African enough. He revisited, and one needs only listen to his speeches, he revisited some of the key individuals who were in the Pan-African mold. He was inspired by Kwame Nkrumah, Modibo Keita of Mali, Mohammed V of Morocco, Gamal Abdel Nasser, Mohamed Sékou Touré, and he said that the OAU must be reformed. And is therefore not lost on any keen historian that when the OAU was suffering from what I call a crisis of identity, and it was being described as a toothless bulldog, some said it was not even a dog, so therefore it could not have teeth. He said, we've got to reform the Organization of African Unity. And the conversations around the reform of the Organization of African Unity started in Libya during the fourth ordinary session of the Organization of African Unity in Sirte in Libya in the year 1999. And it is from Sirte that the AU then moved and graduated until it became the AU in Durban, South Africa in the year 2002. So Gaddafi said, we have to make sure that the continent of Africa under the new body called the African Union goes back to the original dream. The original dream, which was articulated in 1963, he went back to the argument that in order to be respected in the world, we needed one army. So he started talking about one army and eliminating all the bases that were particularly present in different parts of Africa by Western powers. He needed a unified command. He said, in addition to that, we needed to take charge of our resources. So where there was oil, we've got to produce and use our own oil for the benefit of the people. He said, we've got to have one common foreign policy in order to be able to participate in the affairs of the world. And that demanded, among other things, that we've got to have one government that is drawn from the experiences of the peoples of Africa. And it's not lost on me that he invited at one time all the known traditional rulers of Africa, and they invited them to his home in Sirte, and they named Muammar al-Gaddafi the King of Kings. In that way, he was telling them that in order to appreciate and understand Africa, we've got to move into the direction of having systems of governance that were informed by our own realities. And Muammar al-Gaddafi did not stop there. Although he himself was accused to be a dictator, he said that the people must be involved in governance. So he gave meaning through his Green Book, which was published in the 1970s, the late 1970s. He gave pride of place to the people and said that the people must be involved and consulted at different levels. But there is one thing that he said which I think ruffled the Western world. When he said that the time had come to revisit the Bretton Woods institutions, he questioned, why should the IMF, why should the World Bank dictate how we conduct our affairs? Why should the dollar be the dominant currency on the basis of which we sell our goods and commodities? He therefore suggested that Africa must have one currency. He said, and he suggested that it should be called the African dinar. One can understand, I'm sure other names could have been suggested. And he said, the African dinar will be gold-based. It will be a currency that will be backed by the gold, and Africa produces a sizable amount of gold. And it is from that standpoint that Muammar al-Gaddafi started to experience the sanctions that we now know that Libya was subjected to. It is from that standpoint that the Western world started to be hostile to Muammar al-Gaddafi. He was accused of having been one of the major sponsors of individuals who are not considered to be very democratic. And in this regard, one of the individuals that was mentioned was Idi Amin of Uganda. And ultimately, of course, that was torpedoed because there were elements within the African Union who are now being primed to fight all these ideas that were being brought forth by Muammar al-Gaddafi. In a sense, therefore, it can be said that some of the ideas of Muammar al-Gaddafi are some of the ideas that later congealed into what we now see as Africa Agenda 2063 and Africa Continental Free Trade Area. But domestically, Muammar al-Gaddafi was beginning to have problems. He was beginning to have problems because the revenues that came from oil were not flowing as fast as was expected, or they were not flowing in the manner that was desirable and to sustain the programs that he had initiated, such as health, such as housing, such as social welfare. And it is to be noted that that was during the period of the Arab Spring. When the Arab Spring therefore started in earnest, initially in Tunisia and spread throughout the Arab world, then Muammar al-Gaddafi and his administration was not spared, because within his own administration, it can be argued, there were fifth columnists who argued that he was spending too much time on this African project. And it is true that he did finance quite a number of African countries, even by giving them money directly or giving them subsidies, while in the view of those others, the domestic situation in Libya was not as rosy as was being depicted to the world. So in the face of those contestations and in the face of the Arab Spring, the Gaddafi administration, which was also facing an onslaught from the West, became victimized, and a civil war broke out. And this civil war, we now know that it was choreographed both internally and externally. And we know that Gaddafi was then accosted and ultimately arrested and murdered in the streets of Libya in a manner that we know was carefully choreographed by his enemies from the West, who were using individuals within his own country. And as a result of the death of Muammar al-Gaddafi, Libya descended into the chaos in which she now finds herself. Libya descended into the confusion in which she now finds herself, with two contesting governments. And it's not lost on me that one of the last surviving individuals in his own family, his son, was recently assassinated, and the Gaddafi lineage has been brought to an end. History will therefore remember Muammar al-Gaddafi in the following ways. They'll remember Muammar al-Gaddafi as the leader who freed the Libyans from the feudal administration of King Idris. They'll remember Muammar al-Gaddafi as the leader who confronted the Western world. They'll remember Muammar al-Gaddafi as the leader who gave pride to the Libyan people and used the resources of Libya for the benefit of Libyans. They'll remember Muammar al-Gaddafi as the leader who was in the forefront of the Pan-African clarion call for African unity. They'll remember Muammar al-Gaddafi as the revolutionary and a reformist leader who stood on the pedestal and said, African resources must be used for the benefit of Africa. They remember Muammar al-Gaddafi as the leader who said, a united Africa is an Africa which can stand in the face of the world. Like all leaders, he had his failings, but when the scales of history are applied, I believe that his positives will outweigh his negatives. Muammar al-Gaddafi. Thank you very much. We continue our conversation, and we have today focused on an interesting historical figure in the continent of Africa, Libya's Muammar al-Gaddafi. We will come back again as we continue with these conversations. Thank you very much, and keep following us.